Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael, and I am reading today's Midland Reporter Telegram, Friday, July 22, 2022. Front page. Crackdown to pair crude output. Oil lobbyists say redesignating Permian Basin drilling is high economic risk. By Jennifer A. Dlouhy, Bloomberg. The Biden administration's plan to crack down on smog in the oil-rich Permian Basin threatens to curb crude production while gasoline prices are at near-record highs and energy scarcity grips the globe, the industry warned Thursday. Oil's lobbying heavyweights are appealing directly to top White House officials to slam the brakes on the plan, arguing that any move to redesignate drilling hotbeds in Texas and New Mexico as violating ozone air quality standards poses such high economic risks it should be subject to greater analysis and public scrutiny. The Environmental Protection Agency's proposal to cut smog raises the potential for increased operating expenses, decreased federal leasing revenues, permitting delays, and decreased oil and natural gas production in the nation's most productive basin, the group said in a letter to leaders of the White House Office of Management and Budget and its Regulatory Affairs Office. A non-attainment designation would ensure the people and communities throughout the Permian Basin no longer suffer the harmful and costly effects of smog, American Petroleum Institute, American Exploration and Production Council, Texas Oil and Gas Association, and other groups. The missive was sent Thursday by the American Petroleum Institute, American Exploration and Production Council, Texas Oil and Gas Association, and other groups who have spent weeks huddling over the potential consequences of the ozone plan since it was first outlined in a public notice last month. The move by the EPA to consider giving the Permian a so-called non-attainment designation was encouraged by conservationists who say they are alarmed by the indications ground-level ozone has surged along with oil and gas development. Ozone, which is the key ingredient of smog, is formed when volatile organic compounds and other air pollution that escapes smokestacks, tailpipes, and oil wells reacts with sunlight. Even at low levels, it can worsen asthma, emphysema, and other respiratory illnesses. While Texas does not have monitors taking ozone readings on its side of the Permian, those just over the border in New Mexico's Eddy and Lee counties have recorded average ground-level ozone exceeding the 2015 federal standard of 70 parts per billion several years running. If the region is deemed in violation, state regulators would have 3 years to develop plans for lowering ozone levels, including by preventing new industrial facilities from worsening air quality and ensuring existing sites deploy technology to keep pollution at bay. A non-attainment designation would ensure that people and communities throughout the Permian Basin no longer suffer the harmful and costly effects of smog, grassroots environmental and public health groups said in a July 12th letter to President Joe Biden. The oil groups argue that the clampdown could result in existing facilities being forced to shut down and could have the unintended consequence of slowing the approval of oil and natural gas infrastructure designed to reduce greenhouse gas emissions across the basin. The potential economic impacts are so severe, they contend, the White House should consider the proposal a significant regulatory action, a designation that triggers more stringent review, and the EPA should open it up for public comment. Small Bites. Hook and Reel brings boil bag experience to Midland. It offers hot bites, cold sips, good vibes with Cajun flair. By Morgan Taylor Thomas. After opening in mid-January, Hook and Reel has been serving Midlanders a drive to Odessa for an authentic Cajun experience, full of massive, picture-perfect seafood platters and drinks. Here are some takeaways. Hot bites, imagine. A fresh, steamy garlic butter-coated lobster tail, paired with perfectly boiled potatoes and corn on the cob. Now picture it in a giant plastic bubble bag. Sounds a little weird, right? Well, at Hook and Reel, it takes the cake. Patrons go through the four-step process with their waiter or waitress, ordering a catch-mix-match, such as snow crab clusters and New Zealand mussels, picking a plain or explosively flavorful sauce, deciding on a spice level, and finally, some add-ons, like noodles, hard-boiled eggs, and more. The restaurant also has an array of fried food options, such as chicken tenders and wings. Soups and salads are also available, as well as po' boys and a shrimp spaghetti dish. During happy hour, 2 p.m. to 5 p.m., Mondays through Thursdays, hush puppies, mozzarella sticks, wings, and the unadvertised combo platter are around half off. Cold sips. From 8 tap beers, including Eccentric Brewing's Midland Lager, to over 10 signature drinks, the full-service bar is a good alternative for people riding solo for the night. Hook Punch, the establishment's take on a Blue Hawaiian, and Cajun Candy, a sweet drink garnished with a sour rainbow treat, remain the top two sellers, giving customers Instagram-worthy moments. During happy hour, expect $5 to $6 shots and other discounted drinks. Good vibes. Although it may take a minute for eyes to adjust, Hook and Reel's dim lighting, oceanic decor, and punny wall quotes, such as "Let's get sauced," transports clientele into a seaside dimension. Deep booths and an extremely friendly staff make the chain location feel like a small town business, both enticing and comforting. All tables are cleaned and covered in logo printed paper in between eaters, so don't be afraid to get messy. Martin truly lives his whole life with a servant's heart. By Iris Foster. The 4th of July has come and gone, but Bill Martin is an old-fashioned patriot with abiding love for God and country. In fact, he'd like his legacy to be twofold. I tried to live by the Boy Scout law and as a common man. He was shaped by a two-generation family in San Antonio. His father served in the Texas Cavalry during World War I and in France during World War II. His two stepbrothers served in World War II as well. A Boy Scout, Bill worked as his father's apprentice in his cabinet shop and at his pharmacy before attending what was then Southwest Texas State University in San Marcos. Fast forward to today, where he works as a relief bailiff at the Midland County Courthouse after two lengthy, desperate careers. His servant heart has affected everything he does. Originally, with his degree in industrial arts, he went to work for Dover Elevators in San Antonio, taught scuba diving, and was scoutmaster for Troop 10. In 1977, he was transferred to Midland and became Dover Bill, a one-person office. In 1979, Bill undertook paramedic training to hedge his bets against unemployment. After 32 years with Dover, he retired, attended the Peace Officer Academy, and spent 11 years as a tactical paramedic on Midland County's SWAT team. Bill served in the Coast Guard Reserves, where his group was responsible for port security, law enforcement, firefighting, and small boating safety. His active duty was 2 weeks at Lake Anastead. Summer vacations took him to Galveston, where he berthed aboard the restored bark Alyssa, a tall ship docked there and maintained in sailing condition by people like him, an all-volunteer crew. New hobbies consumed his extra time, such as participating with the Greenwood Fire Department as ground team leader for the Civil Air Patrol, medical team leader for Rock the Desert, and as an in-demand wooden cross and Christmas ornament carver. Bill bought a spacious workshop, which came with a house, storage building, and guest cottage. That allowed him to move most of his father's woodworking tools and saws to Midland. His previous projects had consisted of cedar-lined hope chests for a few friends. A swinging baby cradle followed, until the pastor at St. Luke's United Methodist Church asked him to carve small crosses for their annual confirmands. This was followed by a request from someone in the Parables Sunday School class to craft a unique piece for its annual ornament exchange. Bill said as soon as one Christmas party ends, he's already thinking about the ornament design for the next year. I might work on it in the back of my head for 6 months, and sometimes it, the execution, works, and sometimes it doesn't, he admits. Primarily using a wood lathe, a table saw, drill press, and thickness planer also help. Bill turns out stunning pieces of about 3 to 6 inches in height. Various types of wood are inlaid for contrast and beauty. He's recently added a small light to some, and no two ornaments are identical for his fellow class members. It's a sought-after item at each year's Christmas party because several members still don't have one. Bill's love for his church commenced the first week he was in town and has grown over 45 years. He's often a substitute Sunday school teacher and has researched and presented a wide variety of thought-provoking lessons for the parables. Some topics have been Islam and other books not included in the Bible. He credits former class teachers, the late Sam McFerrin and Bob Easter, with helping him think about the Bible analytically rather than just emotionally. Reflecting upon his former careers, volunteer service to others, and exceptional woodworking talents, Bill said he has had more time to devote because I wasn't blessed with a wife and kids. He describes himself by quoting Johnny Cash, "I'm a flag-waving, patriot nephew of my Uncle Sam." From the Inside Pages. Oxy donation leads to replacement of fire engine, from staff reports. The Midland Fire Department held a push-in ceremony at fire station number 11 on Thursday. After an engine was lost in a fire in December 2019, Oxy donated a large portion of funds to replace that engine. The Midland Fire Department is so grateful for local partners like Oxy, Midland Fire Chief Chuck Blumenhauer said. We pride ourselves in helping the citizens of Midland during their times of need. Having a corporation like Oxy come to our aid when we had a need shows their commitment to the citizens of Midland and the Permian Basin. The new engine is a Spartan MetroStar, and its home will be at station number 11 on Briarwood Road. The push-in ceremony celebrates that the engine is ready to service the expanding northwest area of Midland and Midland County. First responders are essential, and we deeply value the daily work they do to keep our community safe, Jason Seven, Oxy Midland Basin President and General Manager, said. Midland is home to our base of Permian Basin operations, and Oxy is pleased to provide funding to the Midland Fire Department for critical equipment to serve and safeguard our community, neighbors, and families. A push-in ceremony is a long-standing tradition that dates back to the 1800s and the days of horse-drawn fire equipment. When returning to the station, firefighters had to unhitch the horses and push in the fire wagon. Jury says Fort Stockton man guilty of distributing child pornography, by Mercedes Cordero. A Fort Stockton man was found guilty Tuesday by a federal jury of distributing child pornography, according to a press release from the United States Attorney's Office, Western District of Texas. Thomas Scott Perkins, 31, was found guilty of one count of distribution of child pornography and 8 counts of possession of child pornography. He faces up to 20 years in prison on the distribution count and up to 10 years in prison on each of the possession counts. During the initial investigation, Homeland Security investigation agents found that Perkins was sharing child pornography online. A search warrant was executed at Perkins' residence, and multiple hard drive devices were discovered that contained 95,316 images and 1,237 videos of child pornography, according to the press release. Perkins is scheduled for sentencing on October 24th. County authorities investigate structure fire after body is found, by Mercedes Cordero. Midland County authorities have started an investigation to rule out foul play in the death of a person found inside a burning trailer home, according to the county spokesperson. Midland Fire and Police Departments and the Midland County Fire Marshal's Office responded Wednesday at about 1:45 p.m. to a structure fire in the 2300 block of Cloverdale. A Midland County Sheriff's Office deputy was dispatched to the scene after it was determined the trailer home was within Midland County limits. A deceased body was found after the fire was put out, according to the county. The MCSO is investigating to rule out the possibility of foul play. Chewy's Tex-Mex gives to Bynum School, Permian Basin Animal Advocates, by Mercedes Cordero. Bynum School recently received an $8,257 donation from Chewy's Tex-Mex's Friends and Family in Charity Night. The Austin-based Tex-Mex restaurant held the fundraising event on June 13th, a day before the grand opening of the Midland location. Chewy's also partnered with the Permian Basin Animal Advocates to raise funds for the organization and build a collection of dog portraits for their famous dog wall in their La Chihuahua bar, according to a press release. Chewy's raised a total of $2,508 for Permian Basin Animal Advocates from a Facebook fundraiser, donating $1 for every dog photo submitted from March 28th through the 30th. Of the more than 2,000 submissions, the first 250 photos submitted are currently hanging in Chewy's Midland, according to a press release. Chewy's has always believed in giving back to the community and supporting organizations in the neighborhood where we do business, said Eric Stump, general manager for Chewy's Midland. We're honored to have the opportunity to raise funds for two very worthy nonprofits as part of our grand opening festivities and to support those being of services to others. Chewy's, located at 4609 Loop 250 Frontage Road, offers made-from-scratch dishes crafted with an eclectic atmosphere. City of Midland is hosting a pet adoption event on Saturday, by Mercedes Cordero. The City of Midland Animal Services is hosting an adoption event Saturday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., according to a press release from the city. Adoption fees during the final Dog Days of Summer event will be $20. That will include pet vaccinations, microchip, and spay or neuter. The Midland Animal Services is located at 1200 North Fairgrounds Road. Now, here are stories from the Business and Oil page. Oil falls amid signs of languid demand, by Julia Fanzares, Bloomberg. Oil slumped as rising COVID cases in China and stalling rates of U.S. gasoline consumption ignited demand fears, while low trading volumes continued to exacerbate market moves. West Texas Intermediate settled around $96 a barrel after falling 3.5% on Thursday. The slump comes as China's virus cases hover at a two-month high, posing a challenge to the oil-consuming country's COVID-zero strategy. Open interest across the main futures contracts hovers around six-year lows, leaving the market vulnerable to sharp moves. Compounding bearish sentiment, Libya is restoring production with output rising above 700,000 barrels a day after restrictions on exports were lifted. Output is expected to return to 1.2 million barrels a day within a week to 10 days. The premium of the nearest crude futures contract over the next month eased, indicating cooling concerns about market scarcity. Exhaustion is settling in on the oil trade, said Ed Moya, senior market analyst at Oonata Corporation. Oil is no longer the easiest trade on Wall Street, and that has many traders abandoning their bullish bets. After rallying for most of the first half of the year, oil prices have faltered in recent weeks, erasing almost all of their gains since Russia's invasion of Ukraine due to fears of recession, central bank tightening, and a broad move by investors away from commodities. Prices have swung sharply at times this week as volatility reigns over the market. The softness in gasoline in particular can be seen in prices. The fuel's premium over U.S. crude was more than $60 a barrel at one point in June and is now less than half of that. At the same time, retail fuel prices in the U.S. have fallen for 37 consecutive days. Traders also tracked events in Europe as Russia's biggest gas pipeline to the continent restarted after a 10-day maintenance period. While there had been concerns that a failure to restore the flows would roil energy prices, operator Nord Stream AG said Moscow had begun sending gas through, bringing some relief to markets. In Asia, China's persistence with its strategy of trying to eradicate COVID-19 has acted as a drag on energy usage and slowed regional growth. The Asian Development Bank cut its forecast for gross domestic product growth in developing Asia as Beijing's approach to the virus creates ripple effects. Gas price down 47 cents from summer high by Stuart Doreen. In a little more than a month, the average price of gas in Midland has dropped by nearly 50 cents. That is according to a report from AAA Texas, which also states the price drop continued this week with a 13-cent decrease to an average of $4.05 a gallon. The price is down from $4.52 on June 11th. For the third straight week, the average drop in Midland failed to keep up with the state average. The 13-cent drop in Midland was 6 cents behind the average decline across Texas. During the past 3 weeks, the average price of gas in Midland has fallen by 33 cents. The state average has dropped by 54 cents during the same period. The statewide retail price for a gallon of regular unleaded on average fell below $4 for the first time since the second week of May, said AAA Texas spokesperson Joshua Zuber in the weekly report. AAA Texas reported the following averages across the region: $3.74 in Abilene, a decrease of 22 cents. $3.90 in San Angelo, a decrease of 15 cents. $3.93 in Amarillo, a decrease of 19 cents. And $3.95 in Lubbock, a decrease of 18 cents. $4.01 in Odessa, a decrease of 13 cents. And $4.03 in El Paso, a decrease of 23 cents. The average in Midland was the highest in West Texas and the second highest of the 27 larger metropolitan areas across the state. Only drivers in College Station Bryan are paying a higher average, $4.08, according to AAA Texas. The lowest averages across the state are $3.59 in Laredo, $3.66 in McAllen, and $3.67 in Brownsville-Harlingen. The price this week is also $1.02 more than the average 1 year ago. The state average increased $1.12 over the same period. The 13-cent drop in Midland was 6 cents behind the average decline across Texas. Fate of Texas Power Grid Depends on Wind by Will Wade and Noreen Malik, Bloomberg. The ability of Texas, America's oil and natural gas hub, to avoid blackouts during this summer's punishing heat waves is hinging largely on a different source of energy, wind power. On breezy days, Texas has plenty of electricity to spare, even as demand surges to unprecedented levels. On Wednesday, for instance, power use was forecast to skyrocket to a record 80 gigawatts. But officials haven't even asked for conservation, thanks to vast farms in the Texas Panhandle and along the Gulf Coast that can supply about half of the grid's needs on the windiest days. When the wind ebbs, however, it's an entirely different story. Take last week. Demand for power topped out at about 78 gigawatts. Yet the grid operator had to beg residents and businesses to reduce power use because wind was sluggish. Those wide swings underscore the challenge of managing a grid heavily reliant on power sources subject to changing weather. Yes, coal and natural gas plants can unexpectedly break down, another reason why officials needed to ask for conservation last week, and a problem that has confronted the state this spring and summer. But time and again, wind has been a crucial factor in whether Texas has enough power this summer. Whether or not Texas is short on resources is largely dependent on the wind, John Mora, Director of Reliability Assessment and Performance Analysis at the North American Electric Reliability Corporation, a regulatory body that oversees grid stability, said during a briefing Wednesday. Power demand Wednesday afternoon was poised to set the 11th record on Texas's main grid since June. But there's sufficient output, according to the Electric Reliability Council of Texas, which operates the grid. Wind was expected to supply about 8.7 gigawatts of capacity in the mid-afternoon when usage peaked, above the 6.8 gigawatts available during the peak hour July 13th, when the state came perilously close to running short. Wind last year constituted 24% of energy use, according to ERCOT. Natural gas made up 42% and coal 19%. Texas relies almost exclusively on market forces to determine what power plants are built in the state. For at least a decade, turbines have been among the cheapest facilities to build, a big reason why Texas is the biggest wind state. Most days, that's fine. But when gusts fade, temperatures soar, and fossil fuel plants are shut, the state's power grid can find itself in a pinch. Developers are installing big batteries on the Texas grid, which help make up the shortfalls for when wind slacks. Eventually, they could smooth the ebbs and flows from intermittent renewable power. But the grid doesn't have enough of them yet. ERCOT sees record demand again. Residential AC use accounts for about half during the day. By Shelby Webb, staff writer. In a summer punctuated by days of record-breaking power demand within ERCOT, Wednesday presented a watershed moment for the grid that provides electricity to 90% of Texans. For the first time in Texas's grid history, demand exceeded 80,000 megawatts for a moment shortly after 4:30 p.m. Wednesday, enough electricity to power 16 million homes on a hot summer day. Wednesday also marked the 11th time this scorching summer that demand broke the all-time record. Before this year, the previous record was set on August 22, 2019, when 74,820 megawatts were used. That record was first broken June 12th this year and shattered again Tuesday with 79,621 megawatts before reaching a new high Wednesday. Temperatures across much of Texas topped 100 degrees Wednesday. In Houston, the temperature hit 100.4 degrees at Bush Intercontinental Airport. The grid met Wednesday's record demand without disruptions and sufficient reserves. David Tuttle, a research fellow and lecturer at the University of Texas at Austin's Energy Institute, said he expects power demand to keep setting records throughout August and September, putting more stress on the grid. "It means we are more at risk," he said. "Barring some unforeseen catastrophic event, we're not going to have another 2021 freeze, long-term debacle with massive blackouts. But supplies will be tight, and if we see enough generators break or fail, we could see rolling blackouts." ERCOT forecasters originally thought there would only be about a 5% chance that demand would exceed 80,000 megawatts in their most extreme summer scenario. More likely, they wrote in their seasonal assessment, was that demand would reach only about 77,317 megawatts on the highest demand day this summer. Wednesday marked the seventh day the state beat that peak demand estimate this summer, according to ERCOT. Doug Lewin, president of power consultant Stoic Energy, said most of that demand is driven by air conditioning. He said during spring days, there's a pretty even split, with a third of power being used by large industrial consumers, a third by large commercial customers, and a third by residential. On hot summer days, that shifts to 50% of demand coming from homes. While ERCOT and the Public Utility Commission of Texas have programs in place that have shaved thousands of megawatts off total demand among large industrial users and commercial users, he said very little has been done to curb residential demand on the hottest days of summer. Lewin said, "People have the idea that demand response means shutting off the air conditioning, but power consumption can be curbed through far less drastic measures. For example, residents could receive rebates or discounts on their power bill to schedule their pool pumps to run during off-peak periods, or they might receive a $20 rebate if they pre-cool their homes in the morning so it stays cool in the afternoon hours without having to incessantly run their air conditioning units. But even if high demand on the residential side is curtailed during the peaks on the hottest of days, the heat also affects generation. High temperatures can cause problems with thermal power plants, such as natural gas-fired plants, making them less efficient and more prone to issues, especially in a year many have been told by ERCOT to delay maintenance to help feed the sky-high demand. At the same time, wind energy as a resource produces less power in the middle of hot summer days, typically ramping up in the evenings. Solar typically performs well on hot summer days, but that resource has not been nearly as well developed as wind and thermal generation. Tuttle said all three will be key to avoiding tight conditions and the potential for temporary rolling blackouts this summer. We hope that all the thermal generation can make it through the summer reliably, and we have good wind and solar, Tuttle said. It's all needed. Obituaries published Friday, July 22nd from the Midland Reporter-Telegram. Glenna Reeves. Glenna Reeves passed away Saturday, July 16th in Midland. She was 86. Mrs. Reeves was born in Portales, New Mexico, to parents Othello and Minnie Pate. She married James Reeves on December 3rd, 1951. Mrs. Reeves is survived by her son, Bobby, and wife Robin Reeves of Abilene, daughter Vicky and husband Wilkie Coenzen of Midland, daughter Kathy and husband Randy Hutton of Midland, 6 grandchildren, 13 great-grandchildren, 2 great-great-grandchildren, 1 brother, Varel Pate. A graveside service will be held at Lubbock Rest Haven. Family suggests memorials be made to Special Olympics, Big County 3444 North 1st Suite, 402, Abilene, Texas, 79602. Death notices from Friday. Irma G. Marquez. Irma G. Marquez, 80 of Midland, passed away Wednesday, July 20th. Viewing is scheduled for Friday, July 22nd from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., with a rosary to be recited at 7 p.m. Friday evening at Heavenly Gate Funeral Home. A mass will be celebrated Saturday, July 23rd at 10 at San Miguel Archangel Catholic Church. Teresa Renee Hutchins. Teresa Renee Hutchins of Odessa died July 10th in Odessa, Texas. Funeral, followed by burial, will be Saturday at 2 p.m. Arrangements entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory in Midland.
This is Reed, and this is the Odessa American for Friday, July 22nd, 2022. Podcast aims to take bite out of crime. The folks at Odessa Crime Stoppers are expanding their repertoire and creating podcasts featuring missing people and unsolved homicides. Back when Crime Stoppers began 39 years ago, they relied on newspaper articles, TV news, and radio spots to ask people for help in solving crimes. In more recent times, they've created their own website, Facebook page, and YouTube channel. Starting this fall, CEO Susan Rogers said the nonprofit will begin airing at least one 20 to 25 minute podcast per month. With the help of local law enforcement, Crime Stoppers have already identified the first 6 cases, 3 Odessa Police Department cases and 3 Ector County Sheriff's Office cases. The name for the podcast? Behind the Line. Quote, we're going to start out probably dropping one once a month for a few months until we make sure we've got all the glitches out. I'm sure there'll be a few, end quote, Rogers said. Quote, we've got all of our equipment purchased. We've got everything ready to go. In the end, we're hoping to drop an episode twice a month, and at some point, we've got cases that will be multi-episodes, and we will drop those all at one time. So you can binge listen to those. We won't make you wait 2 weeks apart. Some of them we're going to have anywhere from 5 to 8 episodes, end quote. The idea for the podcast came from ECSO Deputy Ryan Kelly, a 9-year veteran of the department who was assigned to Crime Stopper several months back. Kelly, 29, remembers when Crime Stoppers used to feature the crime of the week back in the 90s. Shortly after he started his new assignment, he began putting together and posting old unsolved crimes to YouTube. Quote, I figured with my generation, we're better off doing things that are internet-based, end quote, Kelly said. That's when he pitched the podcast idea to Rogers. Quote, I said, you know, a podcast would be a great thing to do with some of our cases. Let's see if anybody has done any of these. End quote, Rogers said. They quickly discovered hundreds of crime-related podcasts, including some that featured Odessa cold cases. Although some of them included erroneous information, Rogers said. Odessa Crime Stoppers podcast will feature interviews with local investigators, crime scene technicians, witnesses, and family and friends of the victims, Rogers said. Quote, we're going to talk to anybody that we can make contact with that is willing to come on the podcast. We're hoping to get a different view, end quote, Rogers said. Quote, with a lot of the podcasts, you can obviously tell that they've done their research. They've gotten it from newspaper archives, but because of the graciousness of law enforcement around here, they have agreed to speak with us, end quote. The podcast will also have an educational bent to them, she said. Quote, we're hoping that it's going to be different than most podcasts that are out there because we're going to have interviews with experts in different fields, end quote, Rogers said. Quote, we had Pat Harris come in and talk to us. He retired from OPD. He was in their criminalistics division. He came and talked to us about the advancements of DNA from the DNA that they had back early on to touch DNA now and what little specimens it takes now to be able to do that, end quote. Many of the area's unsolved cases go back to the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and so many things have changed since then, Rogers said. Quote, due to the advances in technology, there may be new leads in cold case investigations, not only advanced DNA analysis, but latent print evidence. Trace evidence and tool mark advancements all offer the potential for new clues in old investigations, end quote, said Texas Ranger Jeffrey Strain, who is with Company E, the Unsolved Crimes Investigation Program. You can tell how old people are just from the comments they make after listening to the various podcasts, Rogers said. Quote, because they're saying, well, why didn't they read DNA? Why didn't they run this when it's a 60-year-old case? You want to say, you know, DNA was not a thing in the 60s. It was barely a thing in the 60s, and it certainly wasn't used by law enforcement, end quote, she said. She also hopes that time itself will also play a factor for some people. Quote, I think people, as they age, they mature and they grow up and they have families and they start thinking about the things that happened when they were younger, end quote, Rogers said. Quote, if they were a witness to something back then and they were afraid to say something about it, maybe now they're older and they have a family, they'll understand what closure is for families. Maybe there's more likelihood that they'll want to come to talk to us about it or give us some information, end quote. The amount of time that has passed can also work in Crime Stoppers' favor in other ways as well. Quote, we've advanced. We can literally take tips without ever speaking to you at all. We have an app. You can do it through the website. We pay our rewards through the app so that we don't ever make contact. We never hear your voice. There's nothing to be afraid of anymore, end quote. Crime Stoppers paid for the recording equipment through fundraising and will pay for the podcast themselves with a bit of advertising, Rogers said. The podcast will be free for listeners, however. Listeners will be provided links to the Odessa Crime Stoppers webpage and social media, so they'll be able to check out pictures of the victims and crime scenes and maps, Rogers said. So many of the businesses from back in the day are no longer around, she said. Rogers and Kelly are hopeful the podcast, which will be available on multiple platforms, will lead to some big breaks. Quote, at the end of the day, we want to solve cases and bring closure to the families, end quote, Kelly said. Quote, the beauty of the podcast is you got reach across the world. When we're talking about these cold cases, which I think the oldest one I have from OPD is from 1962, there's no telling where these people are, where the witnesses are, where the family members are, end quote, Rogers said. There's nothing better than helping families, she said. Quote, it's an incredible feeling to be able to be someone that helps get that solved for someone. All we do is take the information. The credit goes to all these law enforcement agencies because they're the ones that do the footwork. We just put it out there and ask for the information and they take it and run with it. But it's nice to be a little part of that when it works out, end quote. UTPB to offer bridge to engineering. High school students will have a chance to see how they like engineering with some foundational dual credit courses through University of Texas Permian Basin starting in fall 2022. Quote, the Bridge to Engineering program offers basic engineering classes to high school students so that they will be able to take it for a credit and that will enable them to save some time, as well as money in terms of tuition, end quote. Dean of the College of Engineering, George Nana, said, Nana said, added that this is the first time this option has been offered. Cameron Wesson, communications and recruitment specialist, has been instrumental in putting it together and making sure it came to fruition, he said. Quote, we are launching a couple of classes beginning in fall of 22. Those are Introduction to Engineering. The Introduction to Engineering will provide an opportunity for students to gain fundamental knowledge of various aspects of engineering, from mechanical engineering to chemical, electrical, as well as petroleum engineering, end quote, Nana said. The second part is the fundamentals of petroleum engineering. Quote, the fundamentals of petroleum engineering will provide students with an in-depth understanding of petroleum, and they will understand views from the industry perspective, including exploration, evaluation, drilling, production, as well as transportation. These are the various areas within petroleum engineering that students can focus on. The beautiful thing about this program is that they are transferable, so it's not boxing students into coming to UTPB. Of course, we would love them to come here, but students that register and get the credits here may decide to go to another institution. If they are focusing on engineering, they can still transfer the Introduction to Engineering in that institution and get a credit for it, end quote, Nana said. Wesson said the courses are $100 each. Quote, so additionally, in my personal opinion, exposing the students at this stage to interact with university professors, to interact with engineering students, to gain insight into what it means to be an engineer, I think it's really a good privilege to have. I'm very excited about offering this opportunity, end quote, Nana said. If the courses prove popular, they will offer another two courses. Quote, one will be in the area of mechanical engineering, introducing them to basic engineering design using SolidWorks. We'll be using the software to design engineering systems. Those are the freshman level. The second course we intend to add will be an electrical engineer object-oriented programming using a software called Java. So that will give them an insight on how to code and potentially give them that test of how electrical engineering relates to computer science, as well as computer engineering. We will be launching that when we get to a stage that we feel comfortable, end quote, Nana added. He believes in the course so much he is trying to get his daughter, who attends the early college high school located at Midland College, to sign up. Quote, I think once we advertise it and the community knows about it and we work with the high schools, I am very confident that we will have an interest, end quote, Nana said. Heather Kress is the dual credit coordinator, and Wesson said she has been calling high school counselors in the Permian Basin to let them know about the opportunity. Quote, but it is summer, so a lot of these counselors are not at school right now. So I think in the coming weeks we'll have a little more interest as we see those counselors answering their emails and calls and things like that, end quote, Wesson said. Both of the courses will be offered fully online, so that allows students a lot of flexibility for them and their high school to work out when they can work on the course. But Nana said students can also take the courses face-to-face. Quote, that's going to be up to each high school, how they operate, but we really want to work with any high school who's willing, end quote, Wesson said. Quote, students who are interested in this can go to general.utpb.edu/dual credit, and they can fill out that application form there. And something to note is these two courses are not in the drop-down menu there, so students should just indicate that they would like to be a part of Bridge to Engineering. They can want to stamp the courses however they want to say that in the additional information box. Then Heather Kress, our dual credit coordinator, will reach out to the high school, and we have to have a partnership with the high school in order for them to be a part of these courses. So we really want to make sure that we're working with all the high schools in the area to allow students to have this opportunity, end quote, Wesson added. Nana said they will have an opportunity for students that are taking online courses to visit with the engineering building, tour the facility, and interact with the faculty and students. The deadline to enroll is September 7th, Wesson said, but courses start in August. Quote, I'm the recruiter for the College of Engineering, Communications, and Recruitment Specialist is my official title. It's part of my job to help these students have a good experience here. I want them to want to come to UTPB to be part of our college, and this is an effort for us to allow students to see who we are and help them become a student here at UTPB in the College of Engineering, end quote, Wesson said. Nana added that this will also help students decide if engineering is for them. Quote, if a student took the Introduction to Engineering, after a semester they will have some idea of whether engineering is good for them or not. Even if they decide against it, to me personally, that's still a win-win. Otherwise, they could have registered for engineering, spend a semester, and then decide to change major. So by giving them this early opportunity to evaluate the discipline of engineering, I think it's a savings on the students' time and a savings on their parents' finances. So it's definitely a win," end quote, Nana said. Wesson said if students need help filling out the application or have any questions, they can either email dualcredit@utpb.edu or call CRESS at 432-552-4555. Quote, "I have to say the quality of our engineering here is very strong. We are ranked number one for the best value college of engineering in the state of Texas. And in 2019, we were ranked number one by U.S. News and World Report for highest paid salaries in petroleum engineering. Even with our fundamentals of engineering and exams, which is for licensing, our three-year average is 86%, which is 10% higher than the national average. So the quality of education here is strong, as evidenced by this data. Yet it is highly affordable. If you look at the return on the investment, it is huge. If you look at return on investment as the cost of the education versus the salary, if you take that ratio, UTPB is much in a better place than other institutions," end quote, Nana said. First Basin requests donations for Rainbow Room Back to School Drive. First Basin Credit Union announced via press release that there is still time to contribute to the 7th annual Back to School donation drive benefiting children of the Rainbow Room of the Permian Basin. Though West Texans are in the middle of summer, First Basin wants to ensure area children are prepared with the necessary school supplies for the 2022-23 school year. First Basin is requesting monetary donations be made at any FBCU location in Midland, Odessa, or Andrews, or via member transfer to account number 80001-02. Donations will be accepted through July 27th. To date, First Basin Credit Union and their members have raised $2,031. All donations collected will be presented at 11 a.m. July 29th to the Rainbow Room located at 2525 North Grandview Avenue. The Rainbow Room works with Child Protective Services to assist foster children and all other children involved in CPS care throughout Midland, Odessa, Andrews, and surrounding counties. First Basin believes every child deserves an opportunity to have the supplies they need to be prepared, successful, and confident in school. For this reason, First Basin and its more than 25,000 members are committed to supporting the Rainbow Room. McDonald Observatory works with Catalyst Midstream Partners to protect dark skies. McDonald Observatory and the nonprofit organization Texan by Nature announced via press release to recognize the efforts of Catalyst Midstream Partners, a joint venture between Howard Energy Partners and Devon Energy Corporation, to reduce light emissions at their County Line processing plant near Orla. Catalyst and HEP worked alongside McDonald Observatory and Texan by Nature throughout 2021, developing and executing a comprehensive plan to improve lighting practices of the facility. These efforts culminated in a significant observable reduction in light emissions from the facilities and the certification of the County Line processing plant in May 2022 as, quote, night sky friendly, end quote, under McDonald Observatory's Dark Skies Initiative. Quote, consistent with our core values, HEP is always looking for ways to be a good steward of our environment and to give back to the communities where we live and work. The Dark Skies program not only helps us achieve this goal, but also makes the facility safer, end quote. Gerald Shercliffe, Director of Operations for HEP, stated in the press release. Most energy industry operations in West Texas operate at all hours and thus install outdoor lighting for worker safety. Poorly designed outdoor lights, however, spill much of their light into the night sky and cause blinding glare for workers on the ground. By aiming lights down and shielding them, as well as using a more amber color of light, light stays where it is useful and visibility is increased. These practices also eliminate energy waste and can result in cost savings. Quote, it's about a dark sky, not a dark ground, end quote. Stephen Hummel, Dark Skies Initiative Coordinator at McDonald Observatory, stated in the press release. Quote, the solutions to light pollution are simple, but have a positive impact on worker safety, as well as the observatory's ability to conduct research and outreach programs, end quote. McDonald Observatory routinely measures the amount of light pollution detectable from the observatory campus, as well as from other locations across the Greater Big Bend International Dark Sky Reserve. Light pollution from energy sector activity in the Permian Basin peaked in 2018. and declined by an estimated 20% by mid-2021, where it remains today. The reduction in light pollution is in part due to improvements in outdoor lighting practices, as well as reductions in flaring and changes in industry activity. Present levels of light pollution do not impact research at the observatory, but conditions will continue to be monitored. HEP, as operator of the Catalyst facilities, joins a growing list of energy companies that have adopted McDonald Observatory's recommended lighting practices for oil and gas operators, such as Apache, Devon Energy, and Diamondback Energy. The recommended practices have been endorsed by the Permian Basin Petroleum Association, the American Petroleum Institute, and others. Facilities that adopt the recommended lighting practices are eligible for McDonald Observatory's Lighting Recognition Program, as well as certification from Texan by Nature. Quote, at Texan by Nature, we firmly believe that businesses can operate in ways that benefit not only their bottom line, but also our natural resources, end quote. Jenny Burden, the organization's director of development, stated in the press release. Quote, since 2018, we have worked with McDonald Observatory to spread the word about the importance of dark skies lighting. We applaud HEP for implementing these best practices and taking a leadership role in the region, end quote. Resources to learn more about light pollution and the recognition program are available at mcdonaldobservatory.org under Dark Skies.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.